Now let's continue on. This is number four in the series of calendar calculations, or which calendar should the Church of God use today. And I'm going to read certain excerpts from a paper done by Herb Selinsky. And let me just tell you, I met Herb Selinsky. I went down to his house and spent 2 days in his home going over in great, great, great detail his method of calculating the calendar. Now, as I begin reading, you're going to see certain things immediately which cannot possibly be. You're also going to see that even though he advocates the visual sighting of the new moon as the beginning of the first day of the first month, it is impossible to use. And the long and the short was this. When I was talking with him just before I left, he told me, I asked the question, well, what are you going to do when you can't see it when it's cloudy? He says, oh, he says, I've got a program in my computer. I'll just let you know from my computer. And I said, Herb Selinsky, do you mean that you're telling me that I should forsake the calculated calendar which God gave to the Hebrews, which is called the Jewish calculated calendar, and you say that we shouldn't use those calculations? That's right. And that we should observe the new moon. That's right. And yet you turn right around and tell me that you have the information in your computer. Now, what is your computer? What does computer stand for? It stands for computing, which is just another name for calculating. Is it not? And if you have the program in there to calculate it, are you not calculating? Now, there are many distinct problems that you have with visualization of the moon. We're going to cover some of them here, and we're going to see why. And all of his tables and all of his charts that he has here to show a discrepancy between the Hebrew calendar and his calendar is based upon the actual conjunction. But the actual conjunction is not the new moon for the Hebrew calculated calendar. It comes a day later, or in some cases 2 days, after the actual conjunction of the moon. So let's please understand that, and let's show right here on page 29, he starts out this way. The most accurate method one can use today for the theoretical determination of the required time for the visibility of the new crescent is to use a computer to determine the altitude and the azimuth difference. This is precisely why, brethren, when we get into the book of Maimonides about the sanctification of the new moon, that they always used calculations, even though they used visualization as a secondary verification. Never, 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 never was the calendar ever determined solely on visualization. And we'll see that. And we'll see why. And then use a computer to compare these with the table in Appendix 2. Even when limiting one's attention to Jerusalem, a simple rule involving the required time from the new moon, that is the conjunction of it, to sunset is not possible. That is the when the moon would appear in a short time from that time to sunset. If one's attention is restricted to the month of March in Jerusalem, this required time can vary depending upon the predictable astronomical factors from about 16 hours to 24 hours. Now, what do we have? We have from nearly three-quarters of a day to a whole day delay from the time of the conjunction until the time of the appearing. Now, do you suppose that's one of the reasons that they have postponements? Yes. It's not to delay. It's to make it and adjust it and justify it so it will be right. Now, it's just like you if you had a checking account. What is the actual true balance of your checking account? What you have in your check ledger? Well, you don't know because you may have mistakes in your check ledger. Is it the balance that you may call up the bank and say, what is my balance today? And they tell you, $542.37. But you fail to realize that you've got another $100.28 in another check outstanding, so your true balance is $400 and some odd. What is your true balance? This is why every month you have to take your bank statement, you take all the checks that have come in, you check all of those off, you find out what the balance of your bank statement is, then you take all of the checks which you have outstanding which have not cleared the bank, and you deduct that from the total that you have on your bank statement. And then you take the bank charges and you deduct from that, and then you have the actual true balance. And that actual true balance must be calculated. You can't just visualize it. You have to calculate it. So it's the same way with trying to come to the true position where the new moon would be seen, where you are actually in true calculated relationship of the new moon with the day, with the month, with the year. Now notice, in September, the range is from about 18 hours to 48 hours. And that's when the calendar is calculated in the time near the month of September always. And the reason that it is calculated at that point, because that is the point which has the greatest range of difference. And that is the point when it's most easily determined so that you can have the feast days in the fall fall on the proper days of the week. So remember, it's not a matter of visualization. It's a matter of when it does actually by calculation occur. Other months have ranges between these extremes. And this estimate does not vary with the procession of the equinoxes, but depends on the angle between the ecliptic and the western horizon. These ranges are estimated from page 6 of Vicen, and the computer program mentioned in appendix 4. Now, are these instructions in principle any different than what we're going to find with the instructions for calculating later on? No, they're not. According to page 97 of the Lofosch, which was written by Schoch at a latitude of 32.5 degrees north, that is of Babylon, the required time from sunset varies from 16.5 hours to 42 hours for the whole year. And at the latitude of 51 degrees north, now the further north you go, the more trouble you are in. The time varies from 20 hours to 63 hours. Now 63 hours is 2.5 days and 1 hour. So you see what you're getting into here. Now, then it talks about what they do to try for the Muslims to get a theoretically correct visual calendar for them, because they have strictly a lunar calendar. Now, this is taken from crescent moon sightings. And this is put out by, I don't have it here, but this is one of these publications, the calendar by Hemingway. Okay, this is someone who writes for a church. I forget which one it is. Now it says here, this diagram was adopted from Joseph Alsbrook's The Astronomical Scrapbook, has long been used to predict the visibility of the crescent of the moon. Solid dots, and I won't show you the schematic here, represent naked eye sightings, while open dots indicate failed attempts. The line forms an approximate boundary, while the X marks a questionable sighting made in England in 1916. Now, this one in 1916, we're going to see about it, that it's going to be a very early sighting, one of the earliest on record. The main criteria for determining the crest visibility is the angular distance, or azimuth, from the sun, which depends on more than just the time after the astronomical new moon, which is called the lunar conjunction. The crescent can never be seen when the moon is 7 degrees or less from the sun. No sighting has ever broken this barrier. If at the observation site, the astronomical moon occurs about noon or a few hours before the crescent at sunset, that day will be an impossible to see 6 to 8 hours old. That's why you have the rule to postpone one day, because you can't see it. Now, you see, there are reasons for these adjustments and postponements. They are valid. They are God-given to keep us in synchronization and proper time with the calendar, with the day with the month with the year, and the year within the 19-year time cycle. And all have to match within the 1 hour and a few odd parts, 483 parts less than the justification of a 19-year time cycle. That has to be. It's just like when you justify your account. You can't overcharge it 1 month and then think that because you undercharge it the next month, you're going to make up for it. No, you're going to have bounced checks. So it's the same way in figuring the things with the moon and with the day and with the month and with the year and with the 19-year time cycle. It all must be in balance and in perspective. It's just like, I don't know if you have seen this, some of these displays where they have the dynamo, where they set up a dynamo and then they have a whole pattern. And you touch one dynamo and then everything else starts falling down. And sometimes they can make these to go around the room and run up and come around, clear over the top, and then down, and then a huge, great dash of it at the end where literally thousands of dynamos fall over nearly simultaneously. Well, if there is one domino out of place, the whole thing is messed up. So likewise, if you don't take into consideration everything that there is having to do with the calculation of the new moon and the months and so forth, in perspective of the whole, you're going to have the same thing. You may have it work up to a point, but then it's no good after that. So that's what he's basically saying here. The crescent at sunset after noon or later is impossible to see, being 6 to 8 hours old, whereas the next evening it will be a commonplace 30 to 32 hours. So there's an automatic postponement. You couldn't see it, though it perchance it might possibly have been visible. So you have to go to the next day. A record sighting can occur if the astronomical new moon occurs between midnight and sunrise. In the northern temperate latitude, the spring equinox is a favorable time for young crescent sightings. Since then, the elliptical path, that is the of the sun, crosses the horizon most steeply. It is also favorable to have the moon at perigee, which is the point nearest the earth. Apogee is the point furthest away. For a given date at a given location, the calculated altitude of the moon at sunset will either fall under the curve, probably not visible, or over the curve, crescent, probably visible. And you have to have probably, because you don't know whether you can see it or not, whether it's going to be cloudy, whether it's going to be clear, whether it's going to be foggy, whether it's going to be smoky, or whatever the circumstances may be. Now, how young can a moon be and you still see it? This is taken from the Old Farmer's Almanac, 1985, in an article written by Chet Ramo. He says, the record of the youngest moon seen with the naked eye belongs to Lizzie King and Nellie Collison, two housemaidens of Scarborough, England, who saw a moon 14 and a half hours old on May 2, 1916. Their claim was checked by amateur astronomer Charles Whitwell, who had a passionate interest in such matters, and it appears to be a genuine sighting. The best observations of recent year are most likely far behind. A one-day-old moon will be closer to the just set sun than spread your fingers to an arm's length, and if you see a moon, you can rightly take pride in the achievement that you have seen the new moon. Any moon younger than 18 to 19 hours is worth reporting. You can write to Sky and Telescope, 49 Bay State Road, Cambridge, Massachusetts, 02238. Now let's understand, we're going to see how difficult it is and how that within the near same approximation that two teams of observing the new moon, two teams, they went out, one saw it, one didn't. And they were only 8 miles apart. Now, to one, it was the new moon day. To the other, the next day was the new moon day. So you see the problems in it. Who's going to be right? Yet they both have the same set, same sunset for the day. And remember that you must deal in whole days. You can't deal in part of days. You can't deal in hours as a day. You can't deal in partial days as a month. You must have whole days and whole months. Here's this article. The sighting of a crescent moon less than 15 hours old is so unusual an event that the details should be reported. Realizing that the evening of March 15, 1972 offered an opportunity to make such observations, six members of the China Lake Astronomical Society, including the writer, were stationed on a 3,000-foot elevation 6 miles southeast of this community. I had prepared a detailed diagram showing the locations of the moon relative to Mercury and to the sunset point. So you see, number one, you have to know what you're looking for. It can't be just anybody. Number two, you have to understand the mathematics involved. So you can have the charts so you can see how close you are. This is why when we get in to see about the calendar court, they always question the person. Did you see it? How did you see it? How high was it? How long was it? What was the angle of it? Where was it in the angle of the sky in relationship to north and south? And all of that's very important. Now he continues here. We were prepared with binoculars, WWV receivers, and tape recorders. The horizon of the sky was definitely hazy, however, and none of us managed to sight the crescent, although we watched until 43 minutes after sunset. Nevertheless, a seventh member of our society did succeed at another location. Determined to make a special effort, Robert Moran drove his Jeep to the highest peak at the Marsher Hills, 8 miles due south of China Lake. So here they were with an 8 mile difference. The first one was at 3,000 feet. This one was at 3,698 feet above sea level. At his site, latitude 35 degrees, 32 minutes north, longitude 117 degrees, 38.6 minutes west. The upper limb of the sun set behind the mountain horizon at 5:52:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Like us, Mr. Moran was plagued by small clouds and some low haze. Nevertheless, using a 10 by 50 binoculars and a copy of the same diagram, he caught sight of the crescent at 6:28 p.m. when the moon's age was 14 hours and 53 minutes. With difficulty, but positively, he continued to view the crescent for 3 minutes. Because the moon was hard to see, he made no attempt at a naked eye sighting. So there you have two teams, 8 miles apart. One saw the new moon, one did not see the new moon. That's why it is so difficult. That's why it is so hard to do. So you see, you have the same thing here. There are five major phenomena and major minor effects on all planets which have never been considered. And these all have an aspect of it. And it talks about the elliptical orbit at each location. It talks about the perigee and the apogee. And it talks about that on a synodic month, now listen to this, a synodic month, which is an actual calculated month from one station of the moon to the complete rotation of the moon around the earth to the exact same position, varies from 29.26 days, that's 29 days and 0.26, which is about 6 hours and something, a little over a quarter of a day, to 29 days and 0.80. So you have got well pretty close to 45 minutes difference from going around to where it came right back to the same position, because the Earth is rotating and it has a wobble, and the Moon is rotating and it has a wobble, and the Earth is closer to the Sun or farther from the Sun at different times of the year, and the Moon is closer to the Earth and farther from the Earth at different times of the year. So what happens when you're both close to the Earth, or you're both far away, or one is close and one is far away, and one is far away and the other is close? Now, what are you going to do? How are you going to account for all of these things? You cannot do it. You cannot do it. The necessary time for full moon, that is to appear, varies from 13.73 days to 15.80 days, a difference of 2.707 days, more than 48 hours. Now, do you understand why there has to be postponements? Because we're dealing with a moon that is not accurate as it goes to the minute, to the second. It can vary. That's the way that the universe has been since the days of Hezekiah. I can't change it. You can't change it. You can't make it precise. I can't make it precise. We have to wait for Christ to come with the restitution of all things, and then I fully believe we'll have a 360-day year, 12 months in a year, and 30 days in a month, because that will be the restitution of everything. Now, here's another one. In the article, Sky and Telescope, in August 1971, on a very thin lunar crescent, it intrigued me, since I had been attempting to break my own record for observing a very young moon. This 1st of July, 1973, when the air was very clear and steady, I sighted the moon with 7 by 50 binoculars at 5:42 Universal Time, that's 32 minutes after sunset, at a latitude of only 3 degrees. In binoculars, the crescent was 100 degrees long, and part of the arc just south of it was much brighter than the rest. As seen from my observing site on Mount John, the moon set behind the mountain only 4 minutes later. So there you have it. The new moon, to visualize it, has to be at a very precise moment and instant, and you can miss it if you're not trained to do it. I could not see the crescent with the unaided eye. At the time of the first sighting, the moon's age was 18 hours and 3 minutes. Then here's another one which shows a sighting at 14 hours and 53 minutes. Another one using binoculars sighted it at 18 hours and 28 minutes. Another one sighted it 20 minutes starting, so forth. It was visible, was only partial, could only see it. The age 17 hours and 18 minutes. So you see, visualization of the moon is only a verification. It is not an absolute. That's why it had to be calculated. Now listen to this. Computer calculations. What are we dealing with? Visualization or calculation? We're dealing with calculation. Visualization is secondary. And if it's cloudy and you can't see it, you have to go on the computer calculation. Computer calculations based on a program mentioned in Appendix 4 indicate that if the moon set occurs after 45 minutes beyond sunset, the new crescent is almost certain to be visible. And if any sunset occurs before 35 minutes beyond sunset, the new crescent is almost certain to not be discernible. So what do? You postpone to the next day. That's what it's all about. The key is calculation all the way through. Let me check another couple of ones here. The word calendar usually implies a mechanical method for labeling days far into the future. The calendar that God gave to Moses. Now, what did we learn about the calendar that God gave to Moses? That it's impossible in this day and age to return to the calendar that God gave to Moses, because the astronomical facts of the universe, the way they are now, the way the sun is and the planets and the stars and everything, are different than when Moses existed. So you know immediately if anyone says, well, let's return to the calendar which God gave. Just look them in the face and say, well, you really don't know what you're talking about, because we can't return to the calendar that God gave. And furthermore, if we can return to it, then I would like you, please, to produce for me the calendar book of Moses, so we know that you're talking about the calendar of Moses and not something construed up in your own mind or worked out on your own computer, which that actually is. And that's the long and short of it with Herb Selinsky. I told him, you mean that we have to give up the calculated calendar which God has used for centuries and centuries and centuries and trust in your computer? I said, no, thank you. I prefer the authority that God has given, not the authority of your computer. And who knows? What if there is a virus in your program? And what if it really doesn't work? And what if it's really off? Now what are we going to do? Did you improve anything or get us deeper in trouble? He got us deeper in trouble. Then he has many things here. Listen to these questions. Are the dates of the current Jewish calendar in harmony with the Mosaic calendar? You can't go back to it. It's a question which cannot be answered because it's something that you cannot figure or calculate. Number two, did the Hebrew Bible appoint a body of people with continuous authority to alter any of the laws of God, and particularly the calendrical laws? Pray tell, where in the Bible are the calendrical laws? Did not God give a body responsible, authoritative to do so? Yes, he did. He gave that to the priesthood. He gave that to the whole community of Israel, which was determined by the great synagogue under Ezra to perpetuate this and the proper calculated Hebrew calendar down to our day. So it's an entirely irresponsible question. But someone reads that and says, well, I don't know. Maybe God didn't give anybody authority to. Never think to ask the question, well, Herb Selinsky, who gave you the authority? Did God speak to you? Are you better than Moses? Are you better than Ezra? Are you better than Nehemiah? Are you better than Haggai and Zechariah? Why? Are you better than the account in the book of Esther? What do you mean? Are the principles of the Jewish calendar in harmony with the Mosaic calendar? Again, a question that cannot be answered. They are probably more in harmony than what you have in your computer. Let's answer it that way, because it's always on time with keeping the feast. And all of these things that you have here, supposedly showing many errors, are not valid, because you're dealing with two different things. You are comparing the true conjunction with a possible visible conjunction compared with your computer program. And who is to say that your computer program is right? So your whole chart here is very misleading, but when people look at it, they say, oh, my, those postponements take away from the holiness of God. No, they don't, because a day for the holy days is not holy until the day is declared. It's that simple. You are not changing a holy day. You are not changing a calendar day. You are keeping it in conjunction as God has said that delights to rule by the day and to rule by the night for times and seasons and years. That's what it's being kept in conjunction with. Then he says this, thus, the current Jewish calendar is in disharmony with the biblical principle that the Mosaic calendar be a solar lunar calendar in nature. Wrong. That is a false, lying statement. The current calculated Hebrew calendar takes into account solar and lunar everything. But people read that and they don't know. No authoritative writing on the Jewish calendar exists that reveals a provision in its rule to allow a change in the intercalary year sequence. Well, the fact that it has to be in season means that if those who were in authority in 142 AD, which they were, saw that if they did not change the cycle of the intercalary years, they still retained seven, that's what it's supposed to be, but they moved them up 1 year so that down through the cycle of time, it would not get out of season. So it doesn't rely upon a written authority of the Jewish calendar. It is the written authority in heaven by the creation of God. And that's what you're trying to rely on. Uh, Now let's see some others here. As I said, I've spent 10 days preparing for this, and I've spent years accumulating all this material. And since I first went through this in 1980 with Herb Selinsky, I have watched with great interest. I have read everything that everyone has sent me, and I have seen nothing that is satisfactory to replace the calculated Hebrew calendar whatsoever, period. There just is not any, and that's just the way it is. Now, people can argue all day long. They can be blue in the face. They can be adamant and hard-headed, and nothing ever move you for anything. But that doesn't change the fact of what God has done with us. Now, I'm going to read to you the Code of Maimonides, Book 3, Treatise 8, Sanctification of the New Moon, translated from the Hebrew by Solomon Gentz. Now, you can buy this book from any Hebrew store. Let me also say that Maimonides did not have some of the things available to him that I just read you earlier concerning the calendar in 10 BC. He did not have the historical information concerning the calendar in 458 BC at Elephantine in Egypt. But nevertheless, he makes reference to the fact that calculation was always used. This is a very detailed, this is a very technical book, and unless you are technical-minded, I suggest that you might find it very difficult to read. But I suggest that anyone who wants to read it, read it. But you better set your mind to understand some very difficult things. You may have to read it two or three times in order to understand what it's really telling you. But suffice to say, there are enough calculations in here to show that they knew when the actual true conjunction of the moon would always be at all times. They knew the anomalies of the moon, that is the wobbling of it with its orbit. They knew the apogee and the perigee of it, the apogee and perigee of the earth, the wobbling of the earth, and they knew all of these things when Maimonides wrote this in 1283. So we're not dealing with a bunch of numbskull, pretend preachers trying to exercise their will upon the people of God. We're going to go through the historical facts that are here, and Maimonides makes it very clear as to why. When the whole church, and as the Jews were, spread around the world, you have the problem, when does the month begin? When does the year begin? When do the holy days begin? Are we in season? Are we out of season? How do we keep everything continuously in the proper perspective in the 19-year time cycle and going on down through time? That's what it's all about. Now, from the introduction, in the main, it is here, Maimonides is here concerned with the laws bearing on bygone times. That just means times in the past. It doesn't mean the laws are now forsaken. When the regulation of the calendar had been the prerogative of the court, that is the calendar court called the Sanhedrin in Jerusalem, and executed month by month and year by year. It is noteworthy, however, that even this in this section, he takes occasion to indicate that the laws foreshadow the subsequent development of the calendar, characterized by the mathematical method aiming at a universal and permanent regulation. That's why we have the calculated Hebrew calendar. He lays great stress on the thesis that the Mosaic Sinaitic tradition that had been prescribed sanctification by the court on the basis of visual observation had also prescribed regulation of the calendar by calculation. Why? Because it's hard to see the new moon. So you've got to know whether it is theoretically possible to see it or not. And if it's not theoretical possible to see it, why watch for it? And if it is, then you should. And then, because people would come in and lie about whether they saw it or not, they had to question them and they had to have the calculations to make sure that what the witnesses were telling you was actually true and substantiated by calculations. So we're going to see through this whole thing that all the way back in time, calculations were the bottom line for everything that was done. So people today who get up and say we should not have the Hebrew calculated calendar do not have a clue as to what they are saying. They're just mouthing something that they have read that someone has written, or they're mouthing what they're told. They haven't researched it to know. Calendar by calculation for the time when the Sanhedrin should have ceased to function. The ancient court had been obligated to engage in astronomical computation. What did we just read about Herb Solinsky here? Astronomical computation, correct? What are we reading about here? Astronomical computation. Is that not what we're talking about in all of these things? I have yet to see any calendar proposal that does not have some kind of computation to it. And I have yet to see one that does not have some kind of postponement to it, though at the beginning of their papers they deny that postponements are valid. They're certainly most valid. The ancient court had the obligation to engage in astronomical computation and thus determine beforehand whether the new crescent might or might not be visible in its proper time and could bring certain astronomical data to bear on their examination of the witnesses to the visibility. It's just only reasonable. You go into a bank and you want to justify your account, you have to have your figures and they have their figures, and if someone's wrong, then you have to justify it. It's exactly the same way in trying to figure out when the visibility of the new moon would be. And since the crucial center of observation had been Palestine, the seat of the Sanhedrin, that's the part of the Sanhedrin which was the calendar court, he proposes to make all his calculations on the basis of the geographical area of Jerusalem and its environs. And that is absolutely positively true, because out of Zion will go the law. Which area, he says, extends in a northern latitude from 30 to 35 degrees and in the western longitude from 21 to 17 degrees, which is a very narrow band indeed. So that's the basis from which all the calculations of the Hebrew calendar are based upon. But since these matters are based upon demonstrable, irrefutable proofs, in other words, mathematics are not tradition. Calculations are not tradition. They are either true and accurate or they are not true and accurate. So they are irrefutably correct or irrefutably wrong. So we're not dealing with throw away the traditions of Judaism. We're dealing with what is actually true. Since these matters are based on demonstrable, irrefutable proofs, we need not be concerned with the identity of the authorities in whose names the proofs and demonstration have been transmitted, be they Hebrew prophets or Gentile sages. By astronomical calculation, one may determine as a possibility or an impossibility, but not as a matter of complete certainty, that a new crescent would be seen on the eve of the 30th day of any given month. The court was empowered on the authority of the Mosaic tradition to guide itself by astronomical calculations and to have one full month followed by a defective month. The full month is 30 days. Remember we talked about that? 30 days and 29 days. The 29-day month is a defective month. Or exceptionally, to declare two successive months both full or both defective, but never to let a year include less than four or more than 8 full months. Why? To keep the year in balance with the year behind, with the year ahead, with the whole 19-year time cycle. In effect, it concerns the question whether the new crescent may be assumed to be seen in countries to the east and west of Palestine if it had been seen in Palestine, and what inferences may be made for Palestine if the new crescent has or has not been seen in the countries east and west. So they're considering everything. It's not just some sort of antiquated throw it away because we are greater with evolved knowledge. We don't have that, brethren. The mathematics here are tremendous, yet they are simple enough that you can sit down and do it. Therefore, Maimonides says he has deemed it appropriate to indicate here how astronomical data computed by the court in advance, specifically, data bearing on the relative position of the eclipse and the equinox, could serve as criterion of the trustworthiness of the witnesses. So there we go. Even when you have the witnessing of it by actual observation, it had to be proved and verified by calculation. Later we are going to see that if the visualization was wrong, the calculation stood. Here's another quote. The secrets of the calendar, which he says was well known to the great sages, but which they divulged to only a select few. but the few knew, and they passed it down. Since the works of the men of Issachar have not been preserved, we read that a little earlier concerning of what they understood. Then they got their mathematics from the different ones in Babylon, in Persia, and in Greece, and in all cases, all of this information came down from the Jews who were in Babylon. Patriarch Gamaliel II, in A.D. 110, concerning the duration of the synodical month, and the theses set forth by Mar Samuel in current era 257, we mentioned some of those earlier, on the length of the solar year and the equinoxes. The third principle and lesser importance of the observation concerning the solar cycle of 28 years. Now, it takes the sun. There is a cycle of the sun, which is 28 days. It makes one rotation in 28 days. And then it has a cycle of 28 years. That's what it's talking about. That also affects what the earth is doing, what the moon is doing, what the other planets are doing, and so forth. The plain fact is that, as seen by recent scholars, the system of the fixed calendar was not developed until fully 3 to 4 centuries after the close of the Talmudic period, about 485. That, we have learned, is an incorrect statement. It was fully developed and fully used in the 5th century BC, fully used by Ezra, by Nehemiah, and in the book of Esther to determine the time, and all of those are the months of the calculated Hebrew calendar. Maybe as they went down in time, they had a few adjustments to do, and maybe that's what they're talking about here. But the last known adjustment to the calculated Hebrew calendar was 142 A.D. The effect that the equinox, that the second day of Passover, should never be allowed to fall in advance of the spring equinox, because that was the earliest that the wave sheaf offering day could be, was the second day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. In some cases, it may be the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which they called the second day of Passover. So they are keeping all of this in perspective. Now, here this year, just to mention as I'm going to another place where I have it marked out for quotation here, this year we are having a late spring. As a matter of fact, here we are right at the close of May, and it's 50 degrees out, and it's snowing up in the Rocky Mountains. So you see, these things all have to be taken into account. Sometimes you have a late spring and an early winter. Sometimes you have a late winter and an early spring. So all of these things are accounted for within the calculated Hebrew calendar. In describing the examination of the witnesses, he points out that certain of the court's queries had aimed at testing not whether the witnesses agreed with one another, but whether their testimony agreed with the astronomical data the court had established by computation. Visual observation alone could never have regulated the calendar satisfactorily, if only because visibility of the new crescent in the proper time might be forestalled by many months by adverse weather conditions, such as, or like Saida, indeed, went so far as to suggest that visual observation never did regulate the calendar, and that the fixed calendar, which does not depend upon observation and visibility, goes back to Moses, if not even to Adam. Now, we can't substantiate that statement, but it's highly likely that it did go back to Moses, so the calendar court would come down. We saw that having to do with David and the setting up of the courses of the priest and the courses of the soldiers. In the eyes of Maimonides, however, such a view amounted to a flagrant rejection of the oral law, as we have seen. Well, I think those who believe in the oral law gave too much credence to it, and those who didn't believe in it scoffed at it and tried to throw it away as much as they could. But what we have to do is deal with the realities of what the calendar actually is. That's what we need to deal with. We need to deal with actual days, with actual months, with actual seasons, with actual years. Now it says, here's a quote, throughout the months of the year, Numbers 28:14, which implies that we should count the year by months, not by days. That's important. You have to have days, but you've got to have the whole months, either 29 days or 30 days. And then you figure this, as we saw, the day was 29 days, the lunar month, 12 hours, 793 parts, which is 44 some odd minutes. Now you take every month and you add up that 44 to 48 minutes, and where are you going to make the adjustment for it? Sooner or later, that is adjusted into an hour, and then the hours are adjusted into a day. But you must account for the 793 parts, which then is the 44 some odd minutes, in all of your calculations, and if you do not, you're going to be off sooner or later. Each month, the moon disappears and becomes invisible for about two days, or somewhat more or less, for about a day at the end of the old month before it reaches its conjunction with the sun, and for about a day after its conjunction with the sun. Then it reappears in the evening in the west, and this night on which it becomes visible in the west after its disappearance is the beginning of the month. Now, there are people we're going to read that say that. You should calculate from the actual conjunction of the moon when it's in its dark phase. There's another group which says you should watch the setting of the moon and begin there, because the setting of the moon ends the month just like the sunset ends the day. Wrong. The way the moon works has nothing to do with how the sun works. The keeping of the Sabbath has nothing to do, and the observing of it has nothing to do with how to come to the understanding of the months. No matter whether the moon did or did not appear in the night of the 31st day, no attention was paid to it, for the lunar month never lasts longer than 30 days. So you have that. The authority over the observation of the new crescent and the subsequent proclamation of the new moon day. Now, let's go to the book of Leviticus. Let's understand here something very important concerning. These days are to be proclaimed. They're not just days which happen. They must be proclaimed. And as we saw in the Shocken Bible, it is, these are proclamations of holiness. These are to be preached. A holy day, and the calendar for determining the holy days is not there by just the fact that the earth goes around the sun and the moon around the earth. It has to be proclaimed so that it is correct for everything. Now it says, Leviticus 23 and verse 4, these are the feast of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their seasons or appointed times, which clearly means that the calendar court had to declare the day before it was a month. And they had to declare the determination of when the crest would appear in order to determine the beginning of the month, and in particularly the seventh month and the first day of the seventh month, which is called the Molad of Tishri, the seventh month being called Tishri. So the authority over the observation of the new crescent and the proclamation of the new moon day was not given to everyone. So brethren, all of those that go out on a stump and sit there and watch for the moon, it was never given for you to do that. And for you to determine and make proclamations and to change the holy days of God based upon that is sin against God. It just flat is. As in the case with the Sabbath day, with respect to which everyone counts 6 days and rests on the seventh. But not so with the months, not so with the years. The day sanctified and proclaimed by the court as the beginning of the month was a new moon day, for it is said, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months. That is to say, accepting or rejecting evidence concerning this matter is put into your hands, and that's rightly and properly a right conclusion to make concerning these things. Okay, now continuing on with the book, Sanctification of the New Moon by Maimonides. If, however, the members of the court found by calculation that the new moon could not possibly be seen, they were not obligated to be in attendance on the 30th day or wait for the arrival of witnesses. So it shows you again and again, over and over and again, calculation, 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 even though observation was used as a secondary validation of the new moon. Scripture made it incumbent upon the court to discover by calculation whether or not the new moon might be visible. Why? Because they were to proclaim. And in order to proclaim, they had to do it right. Where it says here, "These are the appointed seasons of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations." And further it said, "And you shall keep this ordinance in its season." Only in Palestine was it permitted to compute and proclaim new moon days, embolismic years, that is, intercalated 13-month years. "For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem." Then the witnesses had to be worthy men, duly tested and examined. The court used to employ methods of calculation of the kind employed by astronomers in order to ascertain whether the new moon of the coming month would be seen to the north or to the south of the sun. If the testimony of the witnesses was found to confirm the results of the astronomical calculations, it was accepted. But if it was found not to conform, it was rejected. So again, calculations reign supreme. If the witness said, "In the morning of the 30th day, we saw the old moon in the east before sunrise, and in the evening, on the night of the 30th day, we saw the new moon in the west," they were considered trustworthy, and the court could sanctify the new moon on the basis of this observation, since they did see the phase in its proper time. Neither the calculation nor the sanctification of the new moon could be carried out with any less but the court of three. Nor was the formal sanctification of the new moon pronounced except when the new moon had been observed in its proper time, nor the pronouncement made at any other time during the day. And if it was made during night time, the sanctification was not valid, because it was already after sunset and it was already dark, and you cannot validate something which is already past. Even if the court itself and the whole community of Israel had observed the new moon, as long as the court had not pronounced the Fecundus, which then is the new moon, the Fecundus formula, before the arrival of darkness on the night of the 31st day, if only because the examination of the witnesses had dragged on for so long that the court had no occasion to pronounce the Fecundus, before the arrival of darkness of the 31st day, this new moon could no longer be sanctified, and the old month was declared intercalated or embolismic. In that case, the new moon was declared to fall on the 31st day, notwithstanding that the crest had been observed on the night of the 30th day. Because, you see, you had all the offerings to offer on the new moon day. So they had to have some way of regulating and cutting it off. They had to have some sense to do it. For if it was not the observation of the new moon, but the official pronouncement of the new moon formula by the court, which legally initiated the new moon. Witnesses who observed the new moon were obligated to go to the court and testify even on the Sabbath. For it is said, "You shall proclaim it in their appointed season." So you see, they were very particular in what they were doing. Accordingly, they were allowed to violate the Sabbath not only on account of the months of Nisan and Tishri, for the observation of the festivals in proper season depends only upon these 2 months. New moon day, to a place held ready for that purpose, there was a meal prepared. So what they did, they celebrated this with a meal. It was not a full church service, as we would call it today. It was not a synagogue service, but it was a meal service and thanksgiving to God for what he was doing. We find that in 1 Samuel, the 20th chapter, in relationship to David and Saul and so forth. You can go read that account. They were not there in the evening, but in the early morning before sunrise, nor did they go to this meal if there were less than 10 persons, nor did they take along anything save bread made of grain or pulse, which was all that they ate at this meal. And this is meant wherever reference is made to the religious meal for the intercalation of a month. Now concerning Nisan and Tishri, so that the time of the sacrifices and other festival observations had already passed and everything had been accomplished. That's the reason that they had some of the things that they did. Now we are going to see that there are certain things that they could do to even postpone when the physical circumstances required it. Here's some of the things that they could do. Intercalation of the year depended, that is, putting the 13th month, depended on three criteria: the equinox, the barley harvesting, the blooming of fruit trees. Namely, if the court had ascertained by calculation that the equinox of Nisan would fall on the 16th day of Nisan or later, it intercalated that year and declared Nisan of this year to be second Adar, so that the Passover might fall in the season of the barley harvest, because you had to have the wave sheaf offering to offer. Similarly, if the court found that the barley harvest was not yet ripe, being retarded, and that such fruit trees as usually sprout during Passover season had not yet produced buds, it took these two conditions as criterion and proceeded to intercalate the year, making it the 13th month, even if the equinox was to take place prior to the 16th day of Nisan. Now, we're going to have a day like that next year. It's the 19th year in a 19-year time cycle, and the Passover is going to be a little later. And some people are all upset, saying, well, it's way past. No, it's not. We're going to see that it's right on, and there's a reason for it. So everybody just hold on and calm down. You don't know more than God, and you don't know more than those who calculated the calendar, and you don't know the reasons and the factors behind it. I have one nasty letter sitting in my Hebrew calculated calendar book, which lists all of the days through the 20th and 21st century. He sent me a nasty letter saying, see, the Hebrew calendar's wrong. Well, you don't know. You don't have a clue. Here, they could postpone it because of the barley harvest, or because, as we will see here, the barley harvest, and there were three places they looked at. If the roads were washed out, if the bridges were destroyed, or if the clay ovens for the paschal lambs were all soft because of rain, they could postpone for another month. So let's not get all excited and get so punctilious that we are more righteous than God, which is a stupid statement, really, because no one is more righteous than God. If you do that contrary to the calculated Hebrew calendar, then you're setting up your own righteousness. Then you're setting up something which God did not declare, and God is going to bring his judgment upon you. If the Jews in the Diaspora had not set on under their pilgrimage because it could not reach Jerusalem in time owing to the conditions of travel, it was necessary to intercalate the year in order to enable them to arrive in season. All of those are basic functional things which are true. Rather, the people were allowed to perform sacrifices, talks about those who were unclean. They could go ahead and do it based upon the situation with Hezekiah. In those additional reasons for intercalating are as follows. If the kids and the lambs had not yet been born, because it's a late season, or if still too young, or if the pigeon squabs had not were still unfledged. This year requires intercalation on account of the lateness of the equinox and because of the lateness of the barley harvest or the unripe condition of the fruit trees. Moreover, the kids are too young and the pigeon squabs are too tender. Only those who were appointed to sit on the council of intercalation might decide whether a year was to be intercalated. And then the chief of the council would proclaim it, and it took three ordained judges chosen from among the members of the great Sanhedrin. Now, we've got a great thing concerning ordination. We have a lot of would-be self-appointed teachers, many of them calendar buffs. And they're causing great havoc among the churches of God. Sure, granted, there have been ministers who have been derelict, but that doesn't mean it disinvalidates everything that's in the scriptures concerning ordination. Just like some people think they have a lot of information, now they can go out and watch for the new moon. You don't have a clue as to what you're doing. And I'm sure nobody has as much knowledge as Maimonides did. You get his book and read it. Again, a year could be pronounced as intercalated in the daytime only. If it happened that the pronouncement was made at night, the intercalation was not valid. The court had authority to ascertain by calculation and to determine which year was to be intercalated. It could do so whenever it pleased, even many years in advance. That's what we have with the calculated calendar. However, the month of Nisan had begun and the year had not been declared intercalated. It could not be declared intercalated. However, If the court did intercalate a year on the 30th day of Adar, the intercalation was valid, so they had certain limits to their authority. The court might not intercalate a year in a year of famine, for everyone hastened to the granary to get the food for the preservation of his life, and it was improper to prolong the time in which the new crops in the field was prohibited from consumption. Nor was it proper to intercalate in a sabbatical year, for then everyone had to depend upon the aftergrowths, and thus there would not have been enough left for the offering of the sheaf and the two-wave loaves. It was customary, however, to intercalate, if need be, the year succeeding a sabbatical year. All of these things are in compliance with the Scriptures, every single one of them. The authority of this evidence is vested in you and your duly qualified successors, that is, of the Sanhedrin court. In times, however, when no Sanhedrin existed in Palestine, fixation of the new moon days and the intercalation of the years was effected only by so much methods of calculation as we are using today. When in times no Sanhedrin existed, the declaration was based upon calculations such as we are using today, and no attention was paid to the observation of the new crescent. Since when did all Israel begin to employ these methods? And then he tells when it began. And that goes clear down to the diaspora and so forth. This is a very long, a very complicated, very detailed book, and I've read it all the way through, and I understand exactly what it's saying. The fact that at present each community calculates its own locale, declaring such and such a day a new moon day and such a day to be a holy day, does not mean that we rely upon our own calculations and determinations, for no one is permitted to intercalate the year or to determine the new moon day outside of Palestine, so that we may rely only upon the calculations and the fixations of the people of Palestine. Our own calculations are solely for the purpose of making the matter available to public knowledge. Since we know that the Palestinians use the same method of calculation, we perform the same operation in order to find out and to ascertain what day it is that is determined by the people of Palestine. The fixation of the Palestinians and not our own calculation, which legally establishes that day as the new moon day or a holy day. Even at a time when the observation was based for determination upon the reoccurrence of the new moon day, the court used to ascertain by calculation with great precision, according to the method of the astronomers, the exact time of the true conjunction of the moon. So they knew that. So you look on your calendar today, which says new moon on a Roman calendar, and that is the actual conjunction. They call that the new moon day, but that's not the new moon day. That's when the moon actually has its conjunction. The new moon day is the day after that, or 2 days after that, depending on how long it takes to get there. The exact time of the true conjunction of the moon with the sun, in order to find out whether the moon would be visible on the night of the 30th day or not. The first step in the calculation is the operation by which one ascertains only approximately, without precision, on the basis of the mean motion of the sun and the moon. Their mean conjunction is called the molad. That means the mean is an average which takes into account the increased speed or the slower speed and the wobble and the anomalies of the moon and the earth altogether. Those are called mean motions. The day and night consist of 24 hours, 24 hours, 12 hours for the day, 12 hours for the night in any season. The hour is divided into 1,080 parts, and we saw that. The reason for dividing the hour into this number of parts is that this number may be divided without any remainder by 2, 4, 8, 3, 6, 9, 5, and 10. And that's very important when you're doing division, that you don't have any hanging remainders left over. And with these denominations, the fractions again may be divided into other parts. By figures, the interval between the two conjunctions of the moon and the sun, according to their mean motion, that is the average motion, is 29 days, 12 hours of the 30th day, beginning with the night of this day, and 793 parts of the 13th hour. We have seen that. With respect to the lunar year, its duration is as follows. If 12 months, the length is defined, it amounts to 354 days, 8 hours, 876 parts. So then that 8 hours and 876 parts must be accumulated and carried over to where then it will be 17 hours, 600 and some odd parts the next year. And if the year is intercalated, it has 13 months and amounts to 383 days, 21 hours, 589 parts. Now, all of those things have to be accounted for. That's why there are adjustments which are called postponements. The duration of a solar year is 365 days and 6 hours, hence the excess of a solar year over an ordinary lunar year amounts to 10 days, 21 hours, and 204 parts. Then we have, at the end of 2 years, it is 21 days, 18 hours, and 408 parts. So then that is carried over. That's why nearly every third year is a 13-month year. For we calculate not in order to find out the number of days, but in order to find out which day of the week, in which hour, in which part of an hour the conjunction will occur. Then that way they adjust it. According to this method of calculation, the new moon day of Tishri, that is the seventh month, is never allowed to fall on a Sunday or a Wednesday or Friday. People say, well, you can't do that. Why? You're changing something that is holy. Please understand, it is not holy until it is proclaimed holy. It is not holy until you determine the exact configuration of the day. Now, we're going to look at some of these postponements here in just a minute. And if the conjunction of Tishri falls on one of these 3 days, the following day is declared to be the new moon day. Why? Remember the time of the difference between the actual conjunction and the visibility of the new moon. It can vary from 16 to 42 hours. So therefore, you must postpone from the molad or the conjunction until the probable visualization of the new moon. That's what the calculated calendar is all about. If the conjunction falls on a Sunday, new moon day is postponed to Monday. If the conjunction falls on a Wednesday, it is postponed to a Thursday. If the conjunction falls on a Friday, it is postponed to Saturday. Now, what I want to do is take a look at some of these things. Let me cover just a couple more of these postponements. Why does this method of calendric calculation eliminate day 1, 4, and 6, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Sunday, Wednesday, Friday, from being declared new moon days of Tishri? Because this method reckons with the conjunction of the moon and the sun based upon their true position, but only upon, not on their true position, but only upon their mean position. In other words, this is done to account for the slop of all of those parts we discussed earlier. As regard the month of Tishri, days of normal declaration are made to alternate with days of postponement in order to hit upon the day of true conjunction. Thus, if the conjunction falls on Tuesday, Tuesday is declared as a new moon day. If on a Wednesday, postponement is made. If on a Thursday, Thursday is declared. And if on a Friday, postponement is made. If on a Saturday, Saturday is declared. If on a Sunday, postponement is made. If on a Monday, Monday is declared. Now, we're going to look at these four postponements and see why. And we're going to see that they allow for preparation for the Sabbath, and that in the fall, because of the great number of sacrifices and the great number of people, it would be impossible to have a holy day precede a Sabbath and a Sabbath to precede a holy day. And we will see the reasons for it as we look at these charts right now. Now, let's look at the chart here first. And first of all, we're going to see Tishri, the seventh month, if trumpets is on a Sunday, postponed to a Monday. Notice that you have, butting up on this, a Sabbath before the Sunday. And trumpets is a great day, which needs great preparation. So therefore, it's postponed to a Monday. But also see what else happens. If it's left this way, here's a Sabbath, here's atonement, here's Sabbath. Then you have the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles following a Sabbath. You go ahead and you look in the book of Numbers and you see how many sacrifices are made on the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles. And then you take a look and see why there is a day of postponement so that it is going to then move this up to a Monday instead of on a Sunday. Now notice then we have the seventh day of Tabernacles and the last great day. When we get done here, I will show you the scriptural basis for these postponements. Now let's look at it. If Tishri, the seventh month, the first day of the month, if trumpet falls on a Wednesday, then it's postponed to a Thursday. Look what happens. Because you have atonement fall on a Friday. Now it's very important. God lays stress upon the preparation day for the Sabbath. And it's very important. We're going to see that the Day of Atonement, it is a day of absolute non-working. So therefore, this rule is to keep the Day of Atonement so you are not working on the Day of Atonement to prepare for the Sabbath. Then here are the rest of the feast days as they come. So you've got this butting up against the Sabbath. Now then, let's look at the next one. The month of Tishri, if trumpets falls on a Friday, you postpone to a Sabbath. If not, then look what you have. You have 1, 2, 3 double Sabbaths in a row when there is great preparation for these days. And also you lose all sequence of the meaning of the separateness of these days. Trumpets is a separate and special and particular day. You also have another problem. Atonement follows a Sabbath. So not only do you have 1, 2, 3 Sabbaths that are double Sabbaths this way, but you also have the fourth double Sabbath, which is the regular Sabbath and atonement on Sunday. Now you cannot prepare for the Day of Atonement on a day of rest being the Sabbath. So therefore, this is a proper and a right postponement to keep everything in sequence. Notice also, after the last great day, you should never have a Sabbath because the feast ends with the last great day. And it continues here if there is a regular Sabbath which follows. So this is the worst of all worlds when you consider these postponements. And I had one man almost assault me when I was down in Houston concerning this postponement. He was so righteous that he accepted some of the postponements, but not this one. But he never had a chance to look at the calendars to see what would happen if it were that way. So all of these postponements are right and proper and correct and astronomically based, and also for the proper observance of these days. Now some of those who disagree with this say that the Jews made it for the convenience of the people. It was never made for the convenience of the people. That is a willy-nilly way of saying it. But these were always made for the proper observation of these days. Now let's go back and we'll look at the scriptures concerning. Now let's look at the scriptural reason for these postponements. I had someone come up to me and say, well, if atonement is on a Friday, then prepare for the Sabbath on Thursday. Well, in a climate where it's very warm, you can't do that because you would have spoilage of food. You can't prepare for 2 days. In the spring, you could. Where you have the day of Pentecost, you can do that, and there are not the offerings that are offered on Pentecost as there are on these other days. But here is the reason. It says right here, Moses said, Exodus 16, you know the whole story about the manna, and if they kept it over on the day they shouldn't keep it over, it bred worms and stank. Now he said to them, verse 23, this is that which the Lord has said. So this is something God has said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake which you will bake today, and seethe that which you will seethe today, and that which remains over lay up for you to keep until the morning. And they did that, and it didn't breed worms and stink. Any other day, they could not prepare for the Sabbath on Thursday, could they? They could not prepare for the Sabbath on Wednesday, could they? No, they had to do it on the sixth day, correct? This is a primary command which takes precedence over having the Day of Atonement on Friday or the Day of Atonement on Sunday. And notice when you have it on Sunday, then you have 4 double Sabbaths in a row. And then what you're going to do is end up with derelict observance on all of those Sabbath days sooner or later. So God made it so there would be a day of preparation in between. Now let's go to Leviticus, the 23rd chapter, and let's see something that's very important concerning the Day of Atonement. It is a day of particular importance. It is a day in which no work should be done, and you cannot come into a fast day on the heels of a feast day. So you cannot have atonement right after the Sabbath day. And if you think you can, then you are not keeping the Sabbath day properly, and you are not preparing for the Sabbath day. And remember, when they prepared back there, they had a lot of work to do. They had no electricity, they had no gas, they had no refrigerators, they had no supermarkets, they had none of this. If they wanted bread, they had to grind the flour, knead the flour, work the flour, bake the bread, and have it ready. If they wanted to have a chicken, they had to catch a chicken, decapitate it, feather it, clean it, cool it, cook it, and have it ready. So you see, today we live in a dream world as far as preparation goes. We don't prepare like they did. So what you need to do is go out, and if you don't believe what I'm saying is true, take a Friday and you start everything from scratch. Do not use your supermarket. Do not use your stove. Do not use your refrigerator. Start your fire from scratch and use grain and make your bread and take a live chicken and prepare it, and you see how long that takes you and how much work is involved. And furthermore, fix it for a family of six and see what you're up against. Now that's why it's there. Now, in Leviticus 23, it says this concerning the Day of Atonement. Verse 28, you shall do no work that same day. Verse 28, whatsoever soul shall not afflict himself shall be cut off from his people, and whosoever it be that does any work. So you have a double negation, no work, and whosoever does any work in that same day, that soul I will destroy from among his people. That's why, brethren, that these postponements are there. They are based and rooted in Scripture. They are based and rooted in astronomical reasons, so that the 15th day of the first month and the 15th day of the seventh month will be full moon days. That's what God has determined that they are to be, and the calculated Hebrew calendar is the only thing that consistently does that absolutely year after year after year. There is not one centillionth of variance in that I've seen in over 30 years. Now then, here's some other things concerning the calendar. Won't get into that one. Here's some more on sanctification of the new moon. We'll leave that. We could go on and on with this, the sanctification of the new moon, but I think I've covered enough of it. We have all of the complicated tables which are in here. It tells you the degrees. It tells you the azimuth. It tells you everything about it. It tells you exactly what should be done. And this is how we got the basis of the fixed calendar today, so that we don't have to fiddle around trying to figure out all of these things and do it on our own and have error. The very fact that there were 5 days of Passover this year shows the total error that so many people were involved in. His calculations, but they are not delays at all. He gives a great thing here concerning what happened in AD 776, where they were off by 3 hours and 363 parts, which then, if it were truly off, then it would be made up when you came to postponing for a whole day. That is not a serious error. That is not even worth mentioning. And it shows how far he's going to try and create his own calendar. Now then, here is the whole Hebrew calendar. If you can get a book on it, by all means try and do so. This was the one put out by John Cossey at Ambassador College, and we took the course there when I went to Ambassador College years ago. It covers everything that we just covered here concerning all the postponements. And remember, the postponements are based in Scripture and based upon astronomical things and astronomical reasons. I won't get into all of this because we've covered it in Maine with the other things that we have, just to let you know that I did that. Now, here's one from a Church of God library in Cisco, Texas, and it says Determining New Moons, And it has a little bit to say about it here concerning the calculations. Here's one concerning the Karaites. I want to mention here concerning the Karaites. They were a sect of the Jews from the 900s to the 1200s. And here it is, the Karaites in Byzantium. And it showed that the long and the short of the whole thing concerning the calendar wars was they could never determine the correct day of the new moon, though they tried to observe. They could never figure the correct day for Abib or the day of green ears, even though they went to great pains going down to Palestine from Constantinople to find out about it. And after 500 years, the Karaites gave up and said the calculated calendar that the rabbis had was correct, and the rabbis in having it correct was not because of their tradition, but because they got it from the calendar court. Now here is something by a man called James Russell, and he says, I want to read here just a couple of things to show you the subtlety of how these things are accomplished. Now he quotes something from Herbert W. Armstrong from the article, Did Christ Reorganize the Church? And he quotes on page 1, careless assumption has led us into serious error. It has left us open to be deceived. Oh, that's a true statement. Herbert Armstrong said it. My. Bible cautions us to prove all things. True. As God's people, we need to be on guard against man-made traditions. True. When they take away from God. But you show me one thing that I've covered in all of these four sessions that is a man-made tradition. He claims they are, but I have proved that they're not. Then he talks about Pentecost being kept on Monday for 40 years. Well, the truth of the matter is that in 1952, Herbert Armstrong could have solved the problem of Pentecost way back then if he didn't have his vanity all involved. I know that for an absolute fact. Then he says here, change should never be a stumbling block for God's people. Now he's preparing mentally the way so you change to his way of reckoning the calendar. God's people should never change or stumble over scriptural truths. I'm reading one of my notes here. A clever use of misapplied truth. WCG has said the same thing about the Trinity. When reading God's word, not the Talmud, Jesus Christ was in constant clash with the Pharisees, Sadducees, and scribes over their self-righteous laws. True. But I tell you, go point out one scripture in the New Testament where it had to do with the calendar. Not one. Not one. Not one. So his statement is completely invalid. Here's a clever way of taking a true statement and wrongly applying it to something that is a misapplication and coming up with error. The Hebrew calendar was put together by the rules of the Talmud called the Mishnah. Wrong. Not true. But people read that and they say, we shouldn't have that. By following their rules in 1994, the first day of the year is going to fall on March 13th. That is one day after the new moon. Why is this one day late? No, it's not. It's not one day late. It's right on time. Because rule one of the Hebrew calendar is to count backwards 177 days from Tishri 1. That's the correct way to do it because of the difference in the Roman calendar. And to keep everything in proper sequence because you calculate from Tishri, which is the seventh month. Nowhere in God's word does God tell us to count backwards to find out when his holy day will be. Show me one place where it forbids it. Show me one place which forbids a postponement. Show me one place where you are right. Then he quotes Exodus 12:2, this month shall be to you the beginning of months. The month of Nisan is still the beginning of months, though we calculate from the seventh month. And we calculate from the seventh month because of the greatest postponement time of the phases of the moon from anywhere from 16 to 42 hours. And that time must be accounted for. And those days must be counted. And those days cannot be counted as holy days. You must go on beyond that and postpone. So he uses the probable actual conjunction rather than the probable visible conjunction. Now then he gives some other arguments here concerning that Mr. Armstrong never kept the Passover on the 15th. Well, that's because the Bible always said that the Passover was on the 14th. So your argument is moot. Now, we could go through many of these. I've got it all marked up. I've sent some of these out, so some of you may have it. He says here, remember what Mr. Armstrong said at the beginning of this letter. Careless assumption has led most into error. It has left us open to be deceived. And it's our responsibility to prove all things. We just have. You're exactly as a hypocrite, my note is, as you had done. This is supposedly from the Church of God's Truth, but it should be entitled the Church of No Postponements. Now, postponements are right and proper and should be, and I showed you why. Not satisfied with that, he had to continue in his doctrine, and we have this one, postponements, another mystery of the ages. Now, when he gets all done lambasting the postponements, then he says here, he shows how we are to do it according to his method. He says here, but God never said the visible crest of the new moon, young new moon, was the method we are to use to establish the new moon. Yes, he did. Genesis 1:14, the greater light and the lesser light, not the greater darkness and the lesser darkness. Now, let's see what he says here. We cannot rely on calendars devised by men. True. So he gives out here a calendar devised by himself. The Hebrew calendar as used by the Jewish culture today is not correct when using postponements and miscalculating the new moon. It does not miscalculate it. It does it absolutely correct. Jim Russell is the one who miscalculates it. Then he says, if you don't do the way he says to do it, you're going to take the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast has nothing to do with calendar calculation. The mark of the beast has to do receiving a mark in your right hand or your forehead that you cannot buy and sell, and that is to control you and take away your free moral agency and your love of God. Now he says here, the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread is the first, and the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles will be on the full moon most of the time. It will be all the time. In 1972, the feast did not start on a full moon. It was 2 days late. In 1992 was a postponement year. Wrong, incorrect. In 1992, four of us stood and watched the full moon rise. At the evening, the Feast of Tabernacles began in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it was a full moon coming up as the sun was going down. You are wrong, Jim Russell, over and over again. Then he says, here's what we are to do. We are to take the dates and the times from the astronomical tables of the sun and the moon and the planets by author Jean Minnis, and then it shows the publication here, adjusted for sunset, 6 p.m. Jerusalem time. He is postponed. This man is completely nuts, and yet there are people who follow them. I get really angry and upset when I find out that he leads brethren astray. Now, is that astronomical table what God shows that we should use? No. Do they go by the probable appearance of the visible new moon? No. They go by the dark of the moon, by the actual conjunction of the moon, which is a day before the Hebrew calculated calendar new moon, sometimes 2 days before. So we're dealing with important things. Here's another one. Church of God in truth. Man has made the preparation day more important than God's holy days. No, he hasn't. God gave us the command to prepare. Judah was given the oracles of God to keep, not to change. He didn't change them. Here's another one. This is all he can ever write about and talk about as a calendar. The Catholic Church in the 4th century A.D. changed keeping the seventh-day Sabbath to keeping Sunday the first day of the week, thus postponing the Sabbath. The same kind of scenario is found to be in evidence when following the rules of the Hebrew calendar. So therefore, if you accept the postponements, then you're doing the same as the Catholics. No, you're not, because the postponements are based on valid astronomical and holy day considerations and are necessary. Then here's another one which talks about Hillel. We disproved that. Here's another booklet called The Total Truth sent to me, which is an absolute bunch of trash. And he says we can get back to the calendar which God created and tries to show that the fifth day of the week was the first day of the month when God created it. Here's another one concerning the moons, much the same thing, concerning how it should be. Now we have from the Assembly of Yahweh, seventh day, much the same thing that we have, that the calendar was introduced in 5859 by Hillel. The monthly date line, this is interesting. Let me read this. Now they have the rotating date line. Wherever the new moon falls and whatever place on the earth, that's where you begin hour one. That's not what the scriptures say. You must have whole days. You must have whole months. You cannot have a part of the day. You must postpone to the next sunset regardless, sometimes to the day after, depending on how late it is. Suppose that the new crescent is first seen in Hawaii. The biblical month will begin at that meridian at that day at sunset. No, it doesn't. It begins at Jerusalem. As the rotation of the earth progresses, bringing sunset to all parts of the earth, sunset and the new moon brings each community the first day of the month. When sunset returns to Hawaii, the second day begins. Since when is Hawaii the center of the holiness of God? Never is. All of these stupid reasonings. You can't find this in the Bible anywhere. It's impossible, they write again, for all of us to observe the festival day at the same time. We must observe it as the day comes to us. That is a correct statement, but it must be calculated to come to it. Now, same thing. Here's another paper by Matt Henson. Is there a biblical calendar? We have proven beyond any shadow of doubt that there is a biblical calendar. Here is a man who presumes and presumptuously takes upon himself to say that we should begin counting the new moon after it sets in the east, after its last phase. Then the new month begins, just as the setting of the sun. Well, how can you do that when the moon sets in the east and then the sun rises? How can that be the same as the setting of the sun when the sun rises? This becomes absolute crazy nonsense in all of this. The Hebrew calendar is not compatible with the commanded new moon observances. Yes, it absolutely is and was designed to do so. This paper is filled with so many errors. Let me just read his conclusion. This paper was written for the sole purpose of helping fellow brothers and sisters to better understand the Bible, to better serve the one true God. I do not ask for money. I'm not ordained and have no affiliation with a corporate nonprofit church. So that makes you more righteous? I have asked you to do one thing. Fast and pray diligently, seek God, study your Bible, prove the calendar from scriptures. We just did, Matt, but you didn't. You tried to prove your own scenario. In addition, this article has not addressed some of the technical astronomical issues, such as the movement of the international dateline or detailed explanations of why sunspots don't affect the biblical calendar. If you need greater detail, please contact me. For the record, I'm not ordained, yet I do have the Holy Spirit of God dwelling within me. No man has a monopoly on the Word of God. There is no presumption in sending out this article. Yes, there is. The only authority this article has is that the scriptures upon which it rests and the astronomical laws created by God, and it was the lights, Matt, not the darkness. If you have any questions, and you can contact me, your brother in Christ, Matt Henson. Here's another one. This is a very interesting paper drafted by Alan and Rebecca Preston. Now, I've met them, I know them, and they were very perturbed at me at the Feast of Tabernacles last year for mentioning the calendar freaks. Now, I'd say that with no apologies. They have the same thing in trying to determine it. Now, let me show you right here in what they have on page 46. They begin this by saying that you should not have any postponements. Then they tell you how to figure the calendar according to their way of doing it, which is the rotating international dateline. If 1 year, one month it's in Africa, then it starts there. If the next month it's in South America, it starts there. If the next month it's in Hawaii, it starts there. If the next month it's in Japan, then it starts there. And you have parts of days, but you can never have parts of days because God only deals with whole days. Now notice what they say. It says you have to get calculated charts to go by. It says how to calculate the new moons and the calendar. You don't find this in scriptures anywhere, yet they claim it's scriptural. To calculate the new months and holy days for 1 year, you need two yearly charts. There are two yearly calendars, a chart showing the astronomical new moon, the March equinox, and the local sundown table. We provided these charts except for the local sundown tables in Appendix B. 1. Find the date and time of the March equinox and mark it on the yearly calendar with an X. 2. Find the first new moon after the equinox and mark the date and the time the site of your yearly calendar. Now, I'm reading this in 1 Preston 3:2, which you will find right after the book of Jeremiah between Ezra, Hezekiah, and Nehemiah. Now, I say that in great jest and with great cynicism because this is cynical the way that it is done, and it is absolutely incorrect and leading brethren astray. So if they get mad at me, then fine. I'd rather have them mad at me and have them repent than have to face God as to why they created such nonsense as this paper. Convert the day and the time to your time zone. And now listen to this very carefully. If the new moon is before sunset, circle the next day as being the new month. Now I want you to think on this as I read it. Example. If the new moon occurs at 11:30 a.m. on the 3rd, circle the 4th. If the new moon occurs between sunset and midnight, circle the following date. Example, if the new moon occurs at 10:30 p.m. on the 3rd, then you circle the 5th. Question, what have they just done? At the beginning of the paper, they said they're against postponements and shouldn't have them. What have they just done? In their self-righteous setting up of a calendar that is contrary to Scripture. They have postponed by a total of how many hours? Approximately 40. Is that not what the calculated Hebrew calendar does? And it does it based upon the visibility of the moon, not the dark of the moon. It does it based upon the average mean time in Jerusalem, not anywhere in the world. Brethren, this sort of nonsense divides the congregation. Unfortunately, our brethren in Phoenix have had to go through this of self-righteous, determined people trying to palm their way off with unscriptural things and say that they are scriptural. It has happened not only in the congregation, their brethren, but over and over and over and over again. Every one of these people who purport to have a scriptural calendar do not. They have an unscriptural calendar based on calculations which are not authorized by God. The calculated Hebrew calendar, as we have seen and as we approved in the first session, is in the Bible, wholly, fully, and totally, and that's the one that we should use. So now you have some information to arm yourself. It will take further study, but as you can see by the things that I have covered in these four sessions, that it is in great detail to let you understand and know why the calculated Hebrew calendar is the calendar that God has proposed, has given, has delivered, has made possible, so we can perpetually keep the holy days in unity with God until Jesus Christ returns.